no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We've got another hour of old-time radio drama for you this week, beginning with Theater 5. We'll hear their episode from January 20th, 1965, titled A Dream of a Scheme. That's followed by Hollywood Star Time and The Suspect, their story from July 6th, 1946.
You killed her! You strangled her because you couldn't stand her any longer! We have one witness who heard a scream, and two witnesses who saw you drag a trunk out and bury it. We'll find that trunk, and we'll find her in it.
Theater 5 presents A Dream of a Scheme.
Johnson, get the men busy with the jackhammer.
Okay, Sergeant. How much do you want them to dig up?
The whole cellar, if necessary.
Right.
Okay, men, get set up over there in the corner. Yeah, that looks like a good spot.
You, Mr. Warren. You and me will go upstairs and talk some more.
We certainly will, Sergeant. I have plenty to say to you.
Then lead the way. All right. Now we can talk, Mr. Warren.
Indeed we can, Sergeant Littler. And let me say, I protest for the third time. I protest in the strongest possible terms what you are doing.
It just so happens I have a search warrant.
You showed it to me. That does not justify your digging up my gardens, making trenches in my lawns, ruining shrubs that I have spent years cultivating. I insist that when you have finished this nonsense, you put everything back exactly as it was to the last blade of grass.
We'll do just that little thing as soon as we find your wife's body.
Sergeant, you have an obsession. You will never find my wife's body, no matter how much you dig up my premises.
Oh, now why don't we stop beating around the bush? Tell us where she is and we can spare your garden.
Stop digging up the bushes and that will spare my garden.
All right, never mind the clever comebacks. It's a known fact that you and your wife fought a lot, Mr. Warren, right?
Yes, I suppose so. Recently, her temper has become unendurable. I suppose our neighbors told you they heard her raised voice night after night shrieking at me.
They certainly did. Especially the Trevers next door.
The Trevers? Those long-eared snoops. My dear Sergeant, they quarrel so much themselves they could hardly have heard me and my wife.
Well, they did.
All right. All right. We quarreled. Though I am a man of the most peaceful disposition, I like nothing better than a pipe and a game of chess. But Wilma would have irritated an angel.
And now she's gone. Evaporated into thin air. That's very convenient, isn't it? Now you can have all the peace and the quiet you want.
I have already told you, Sergeant. After an especially bitter quarrel last night, she left me. Packed a bag, told me she had saved $3,000 from the household money, and was going far, far away. I would never hear from her again, she said, as I wasn't worth giving a second thought to.
What time was this?
About 8 p.m.
8 p.m., huh? Then how did Mr. Trevor next door happen to hear her scream at midnight?
Why, that blasted gossip. Does he say he heard Wilma scream last midnight?
He swears it under oath.
Well, he's thinking of the night before last. Wilma had a little habit of screaming at me just as I was dozing off, just to see me jump.
Uh-huh. Well, he says he heard a scream. He went to the window. He saw you and your wife silhouetted against the living room curtains. You were throttling her.
Oh, Fred Treber's imagination is running out of control. He may have seen something like that two nights ago. Now, I had to help Wilma get her necklace unclasped. It might have looked, to a pop-eyed gossip like Fred Treber, as if I was strangling her.
Oh, boy, you certainly have a lot of slick answers.
The truth is always the best
answer. All right, then answer this one. How does it happen that at 1 o'clock this morning, 1 hour after Mr. Treber saw you choke your wife, both the Trevers saw you drag a trunk out the back door, around to the side of the house, and then heard you digging?
They claim that.
That's why we have the warrant. That's why we're digging up your place. When a man's wife screams, when he's seen choking her, when he's then seen burying something, and she can't be found, brother, we know we have a murder on our hands.
Sergeant, I stand upon my rights as a citizen and a taxpayer. If you prefer to believe loose-tongued gossips like the Trevers rather than me, well, that's up to you.
Now, listen to me, Mr. Warren. The evidence proves to me that you killed your wife. We know that your car hasn't been moved since you had it greased and oiled Friday night. So we know you didn't take the body anywhere by car.
Very brilliant deduction, worthy of Sherlock Holmes. I suppose you checked the mileage on the car with the mileage written on the sticker at the gas station where they greased and oiled it Friday night.
We did just that little thing. 0.2 miles from the gas station to here. That's the only difference your meter shows.
Besides, since the Trevers spent so much time watching me, they would have seen me drive away.
They would have, but you didn't go. Instead, you spent an hour digging. They say that at 2:00, you reappeared with a shovel and a pick, and you took them inside the house. We found them in the cellar, carefully cleaned.
I merely like to take good care of tools. Oh, this is all Fred Treber's imagination. He's heard her scream at me so often, he automatically thought he heard her last night. You know, frankly, Fred is a very muddle-headed man. He can't even play a decent game of chess.
He tells a straight story, and I believe him.
Oh, I imagine if his wife Rhoda would do him a good turn and leave him as Wilma left me, he might straighten up. Basically, he's not a bad chap. But next to my Wilma, his wife is the prize harpy in town.
Don't try to change the subject. You have a $10,000 life insurance policy on your wife,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, and I do not intend to try to cash it. After all, she just walked away and left me.
Oh, you're smart. You're really smart. But we're going to get you. Now, obviously, this killing was done in the heat of passion. You didn't have any plans ready for getting rid of your wife. So her body has to be on the premises somewhere.
Well, there's a nice vacant lot about 3 blocks away. Suppose I carried her over there and interred her quietly with no ceremony.
No. I can't see you carrying a dead woman 3 blocks. This town has too many people around, even at night. You couldn't risk it even if you had the nerve. You buried her right here on your own grounds where you could pick the spot and keep your eye on it.
Well, it's certainly nice to know what I did. It saves straining my memory.
Amateurs like you, when they kill their wives, they don't...
Sergeant, don't wives ever kill husbands? Or have you a prejudice against husbands?
When one kills the other, he or she generally buries the dead partner right on the premises. That's a matter of statistics.
And consequently, my grounds now look as if someone has been hunting for buried treasure. Some of the trenches outside are 4 feet deep.
Now, we'll go to 6 feet if we have to. If you think you can get away with a thing like this...
Excuse me, Sergeant.
What is it, Johnson?
Well, we didn't seem to be getting any place in the cellar, and I had an idea.
All right, an idea. Come on, spill
Well,
it.
You know, we examined the car, but we didn't take it out of the garage. And that garage has a dirt floor.
A dirt floor? Well, what are you waiting for? Come on! We'll push that car out and get that garage floor dug up.
Sergeant! Wait! I protest! Sergeant! He's gone. A hyperthyroid type, if I ever saw one. He should be careful. Someday he'll have a heart attack.
Yes, who is it?
It's me, Fred Treber.
Just a moment.
Hello, Charlie. I don't suppose you feel much like talking to me, do you?
I certainly don't. After all, it's you who started all this, you and your wild stories.
Oh, no, please don't be angry, Charlie. It was really Rhoda who called the police this morning when you said your wife was, well, gone. Personally, I'm sure there's a natural explanation for everything.
You're sure, you're sure. Meanwhile, will you just look at my grounds? Will you look at my lovely flower beds? I have you to thank for this destruction of years of patient effort.
Honestly, it was Rhoda. You know what she's like. I told her Wilma is always screaming, and if you felt like burying a trunk in the middle of the night, that was strictly your business, and we shouldn't be nosy.
You're the one who said he heard Wilma scream. You're the one who said he saw me choking her. What you need, Fred, is a good psychiatrist.
Oh, now, that's unfair, Charlie. That's really unfair. I came over here hoping we could make up and still be friends.
You, Warren, you in the door there. Kindly step around here, my friend.
You're speaking to me, Sergeant.
Nobody else. So you thought you could fool us, eh?
Well, we found it.
Found what, may I ask?
First, we found loose soil underneath your car in the garage. Oil-stained dirt. That was very clever, staining the ground with oil and parking your car directly above it.
What'd you do that for, Charlie?
Be quiet, Fred. Oh.
Sergeant, would you please explain what you're leading up to?
I'm telling you that we found the trunk you buried. Now you watch us dig it out and open it. And try to think of some fancy explanation for what we're going to find inside that trunk. Loosen that end a little more. That's it. All right, Johnson. You and Briggs looked around by the handles.
Okay, Sarge. We're getting it. Come on, Briggs. Gee.
Charlie, why on earth did you drag that trunk out and bury it here in your garage last night?
For reasons I considered good and proper. And a good neighbor would have kept his mouth shut.
Oh, I wish you'd believe me it was all Rhoda's fault. I don't care what you bury.
There you are, Sarge. There's the trunk.
Well, Mr. Warren, what have you got to say now?
Simply that I consider this whole affair an outrage. If I want to bury a worn-out old trunk, that is my privilege.
But it isn't your privilege to put your wife into it first. Okay, Johnson, get it open.
I protest. That is my private property you're going to damage.
Johnson, put the point of the pick under the lid.
Okay, Sarge. Here she goes. She's open, Sarge.
Well, go ahead. Lift the lid.
Oh, really, Charlie? I know your wife was making your life miserable, but wasn't this a little drastic?
Oh, shut up. There. See?
Nothing in it, Sarge.
You imbecile. Lift out the top tray. She's naturally underneath it.
Okay. Uh-oh. Look at this.
Oh, my goodness, Charlie. So that's what you did. Now I understand.
Dolls. A dozen dolls and a great big teddy bear. Oh, no. She's got to be underneath them. Dump them out. Make sure.
You couldn't bear to keep them around. Isn't that it, Charlie?
Please, Fred, shut up.
Nothing, Sarge. Absolutely nothing. Just 12 fancy dolls and a big teddy bear. That's what he buried in his trunk.
All right, Mr. Warren. Now, just why did you bury a trunk full of dolls and a teddy bear in your garage at 1 a.m, huh?
Well, I should think it would be obvious.
You see, after she walked out on him, he couldn't bear having them around anymore. We're forbidden to incinerate things in this city, so he buried them to get them out of sight. Isn't that it, Charlie?
Fred, I can speak for myself. However, Sergeant, it happens to be true. See, Wilma never had children. Instead, she lavished sickening affection on these dolls. She talked to them. She told them what a worm I was, and she pretended they sympathized with her. Well, after she left me, I had to get rid of them to be rid of her. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. You're lying. You gotta be. And yet I can't prove it. I just can't prove it.
Hey, Sergeant, I got an idea.
What is it, Johnson?
Well, now, look, suppose he buried the trunk for a decoy.
A decoy?
Yeah. Suppose there's something else deep down under it. Now, we were supposed to find the trunk,
And then we were supposed to stop digging. Johnson, you got it. Dig some more. 6 feet, 8 feet if you have to.
Okay, Sergeant.
And you, Briggs, you and the other men, dig up those other flower beds. She could be under them.
Sergeant, I forbid it.
And dig deep.
Okay. Charlie, as long as your dahlias are being dug up anyway, would you care to trade a few of your Gordon Pinks for some of my Amber Goliaths?
Fred Treber, never speak to me again. We have played our last game of chess together.
Please don't say that. I love our chess game.
They are finished. Our friendship is finished. Now I am going in the house. I refuse to watch the sergeant and his men commit vandalism on my helpless flowers. Come in. No, you, Sergeant. Well, what have you found now?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. A whole day of digging, we just have a trunk full of dolls.
Are you prepared to believe now that Wilma just walked out on me, taking $3,000 she saved from the household money?
I don't know what to believe. I'm just sure you didn't take her anyplace in the car, and you didn't carry her anyplace, so she's got to be here, right here still.
But if you can't find her, You must be incompetent. Isn't that what you're really saying?
No, blast it, I know my business.
If I can't find her, well, maybe your story is true. This isn't easy, but I apologize, Mr. Warren.
I will accept your apology on one condition, that you undo all the damage, fill in all the holes, and restore my garage, lawn, and gardens to their former condition, or as nearly as possible.
We'll do that. We'll do that. It's quitting time today, but tomorrow, a crew from the city building and grounds department will be over to fill up all the holes.
And take away that trunk full of abominable dolls and burn them.
We'll do that. You know, in a way, I hardly blame you.
For what, may I ask?
For whatever you did. If you did it. Any woman who would talk to a bunch of dolls and tell them her husband was a no-good crumb has got something coming to her. Well, good night, Mr. Warren, and no hard feelings, huh? I only wish I knew what you really did with her.
Just a minute. Oh, it's you again, Fred.
Yes, I waited till Rhoda was sound asleep.
You're sure she won't wake up?
She took one of her sleeping pills, and it's a nice dark night. Sort of foggy.
Well, in that case, we might as well get it over with. It is dark out, isn't it?
Yes.
I can hardly see you.
That's what we want, isn't it? Follow me. I can find my way around in the dark.
I'm right behind you. You know, Fred, I think you rather overdid things this morning.
Oh, I was just trying to seem like the simple-minded neighbor and keep the cops suspicious so they'd go on digging the way you wanted them to. Well, here we are. I'll unlock the door. Come on inside. Quick. Now we can risk using my penlight. This tool shed of mine hasn't any windows.
I know. That's why I suggested it.
Here we are. A little light. Oh, there she is, Charlie. Just as natural as life.
Hello, Wilma. Having a good rest in that wheelbarrow?
Do you have to talk to her? It's sort of macabre.
Well, that's the only time I've ever been able to speak to her when she couldn't yell back at me. You see, Fred, I told you it would work. If I hid her in your tool shed, they would search my property. But you were the one who informed on me, so naturally they'd never think of searching your property.
It worked out just the way you said it would. It's a dream of a scheme, Charlie.
Oh, I had to do it. I couldn't stand life with Wilma any longer. Now, this is what we're going to do. The police left a hole almost 7 feet deep in my garage. Now, we'll put her there. Then we'll put in a lot of dirt. Tomorrow, the building and grounds crew will just find a hole and finish filling it for me. She'll be gone forever, and one place the police will never, never search again is the place they have already dug up.
Oh, it's sheer genius. But do we really have to wait a whole year before I can try it, too?
Oh, we certainly do, Fred. We certainly do. That was my idea, and you agreed to wait a full year, at least.
Oh.
You see, then the sergeant can come over and dig up your place while your wife is in my basement. He'll dig and dig and dig.
Hey, Charlie.
Charles. Wake up, Charles. Wake up.
What is it?
You were having a nightmare. You were calling out, dig, 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 and laughing insanely.
Oh. Oh, yeah. So I was. I was dreaming about my garden.
Your garden. Well, I've made up my mind. All those flowers are coming up, and I'm going to plant some real nice evergreen shrubbery like the Treebers have.
Wilma, you wouldn't.
I certainly would. I'm sick of the time and money you spend on those silly flowers. And you better get up if you don't want to be late for work again.
A dream. It was all just a dream, but it seemed so real. As if it had actually happened.
as if it had actually happened.
Yes.
Hello?
Fred, this is Charlie.
Charlie? This time of the morning? What is it?
Fred, I have to talk to you. Privately. Meet me for lunch. I've just had an idea. A scheme. You could even call it a dream of a scheme.
Has presented A Dream of a Scheme, written by Robert Arthur and directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Elliot Reed, Arlene Walker, Ralph Bell, John McGovern, and Jack Hurdle. Audio engineer Neil Pultz. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Ted Bell. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire presents Hollywood Star Time direct from Hollywood. Radio versions of the finest motion pictures with Hollywood's greatest stars. Today we bring you the radio production of the Universal picture, The Suspect, starring Charles Laughton. You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire, the greatest name in refrigeration, is made only by General Motors. And it is this association of experience with experience, of skill with skill, that makes Frigidaire America's favorite refrigerator today. The 7 million Frigidaires built and sold are the best proof of Frigidaire's outstanding record of dependability, of lasting satisfaction. For back of every great refrigeration principle pioneered by Frigidaire, back of every exciting new Frigidaire feature, back of every exclusive Frigidaire advantage, is one all-important purpose, to keep food good to eat. Remember this when you choose your new refrigerator. Remember the record of millions of Frigidaires in millions of American kitchens. And remember, you're twice as sure with two great names, for Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. Now The Suspect, starring Charles Laughton, with Rosalind Ivan from the original motion picture cast, with a special musical score composed and conducted by Frank Duvall.
Philip Marshall.
It's my wife, Cora.
Philip, how long do you think I'm going to stand for your coming in all hours of the night? The neighbors are beginning to gossip, and I'm not going to be made an object of pity in front of my friends. Do you hear me? Sometimes I wonder what on earth ever possessed me to marry a poor stick of a tobacco clerk like you. Walk to through the forest and picked a crooked tree. That's what I did. A crooked, fat, ugly tree. Go on. Get out of my sight. Go to your own filthy room. Live there. Die there. Rot there for all I care. I don't care if I never see your fat, silly face again.
That's Cora, my wife. You see, I could have liked my home in Laburnum Terrace in London if she'd not driven my son John away. Of course, I turned to Mary. That's Mary Gray. Mary could work one of those new typewriter contraptions.
Well, I know how to use a typewriting machine, Mr. Marshall. I thought perhaps I might find work here with your office.
I'm very sorry, young lady. Maybe you'd do better in a draper's establishment.
I've tried. Tried so hard, Mr. Marshall.
Now, Miss Gray, please, don't do that.
Sorry, sir. I'm all right now.
That's better.
It's just that I've been looking for work for days. I forgot to take lunch today. I'm so terribly alone.
I can understand that. You see, I know what it means to be lonely.
I'll go now, Mr. Marshall. I'll be all right.
Miss Gray.
Yes?
Now, you won't think me forward, I hope, but I'm not really forward. Why shouldn't we pool our loneliness?
How do you mean, sir?
Well, go somewhere and have a bite to eat and talk or something.
Oh, wouldn't you rather go home to someone?
No, there is no one. No, there's no one.
Well,
there's a little place in Soho that serves excellent Chinese food. I think you might enjoy it. I know I shall. And it would be a great kindness to me.
And to me. Thank you. I'd be happy to join you.
Well, it was a nice evening. And then there were other evenings, dinners and concerts and picture galleries and the park. Nice, plain sort of entertainment. Nothing exciting, but it meant everything to me. Well, I left Mary at her lodgings one evening and I was on my way home when I ran into Simmons. Gilbert Simmons was my next-door neighbor. He was a black sheep of a county family. This night, the black sheep needed a little shepherding. And because of my admiration for his quiet, enduring wife, Edith, I was glad to see him safely home.
Stinking shopkeeper back there, counting every drop of his filthy liquor.
Yes, Simmons. You see, have you got your latch key? This is your door, you know.
Shopkeepers, horse leeches, sucking the blood out of their betters. You're a decent chap, Marshal, for a shopkeeper.
That's very good of you. Have you got your key?
No.
Never mind, I'll ring.
How about lending me half a sovereign, Marshal?
No.
Until tomorrow?
No.
Oh, it's you, Gilbert.
Well, who'd you think it might be, wife of my bosom? Good night, little shopkeeper. Good night.
Good night, Simmons.
Come on in and close the door, Edith, did you hear?
Thank you for bringing him home, Mr. Marshal.
I'm glad to be of service.
What's the latest news of your son, John?
Oh, he's doing very well since he left home, thank you.
Edith! Ask the woman, Edith!
Good night, Mr. Marshall. Do tell Mrs. Marshall I asked about her. Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Simmons. Cora, you've locked the door to my room.
Yes, I have.
My key, please.
When I've had my say, a pretty state of affairs when a decent married woman has to lock her husband out of his room to get him to come into her room and speak a civil word to her.
Cora, we've been through all of this before. Why can't we come to an understanding?
An understanding?
We don't get along. Everything we do, everything we say to each other is irritating. When people don't like each other, everything they do is hateful.
Oh, so that's it. You hate me. You've always hated me.
I didn't say that, Cora. All I see is that we've both got some good years ahead of us. Why can't we live them happily? Apart from each other.
Apart?
Let me go, Cora.
What are you talking about?
Just that. Let me go.
Divorce? Do you mean divorce?
Well, if you don't divorce me, I shall leave you.
Oh, you will you? Just you try. Just you try to leave me. I'll go down to your precious shop. I'll go to old Fraser himself. Wouldn't I like to see old Fraser's face when I tell him that he's very proper manager? He's very respectable.
It's no use, Cora.
Don't you dare walk out while I'm talking. Don't you dare.
Good night, Cora. It's no use.
Minnie!
It's no use. It isn't any earthly use.
Philip, you're not eating a thing tonight. You always like it so well here at Luigi's.
Mary, I'm troubled.
Can't I help?
There's no help anywhere.
It can't be that bad.
After tonight, we can't see each other anymore.
What did you say?
It can't be helped, Mary.
Philip, this friendship has meant a lot to me. Hoped it might mean something to you.
It's meant everything to me, Mary.
Then what's changed you, Philip?
Well, I'm afraid that I've behaved very badly. I let you think all along that I had no attachments, no ties.
Well, Mary.
Yes?
It wasn't very fair, was it?
No. But I was very lonely, you see, and I was afraid you wouldn't see me again. Mary, I begged her for a divorce, but it's no use. And I'm much too fond of you to let you take any more risks. Can I pour you another glass of champagne?
By all means. This is an occasion.
This is goodbye, Mary.
My dear. My very dear.
Fair treat, Philip. A Christmas tree blazing away with candles at tuppence a dozen.
Christmas comes but once a year, Cora.
Did you think that up all by yourself? My, what a mind you have. But where's the mistletoe? Aren't you going to kiss me under the mistletoe? You could shut your eyes, you know, and pretend I was somebody else.
Cora, wouldn't it be much pleasanter for both of us if we tried to make this place a little more like home?
No place like home. Is there? Now? Since that creature threw you out 5 months ago.
What are you talking about?
Exton and Winwood. That's where she works. Melbourne Crescent. That's where she lives. Mary Gray. That's her filthy name.
It's quite true, Cora. But it's all over now. It's over and done with.
Not for me. I'll go to your employer. I'll show you up for the worthless, rotten customer you are. And I'll do the same for her.
Cora, you mustn't do that.
I'll go to the house where she lives. I'll go to the place where she works.
Cora, they can hear every word you say next door.
I'll let everybody know what a low creature she is.
Now, you stop this, Cora.
I'll drive you both into the gutter where you belong.
For pity's sake, Cora, leave her alone.
When I've finished, whether or not before. Now, go on. Take up your silly Christmas green. That's all you're good for. Well, I'm going upstairs to bed.
Cora?
I'll give Mary Gray such a Christmas she'll never forget. Oh, why don't you have this kiss?
Cora, please. Please listen to me.
Good night, my fourthly Romeo.
Cora, you better not destroy her. You mustn't, you know. You can't. And she won't. Well, my walking stick stood in the umbrella stand near me, you see, and it was a heavy, heavy walnut stick. It was well balanced, and I took it out of the stand. Then I started upstairs, well, slowly, of course, and quietly. Step by step, you know, step by step. Very good of you, Mrs. Simmons, coming over from time to time like this. It's a great comfort to me.
You've been more than kind to Gilbert and me. You don't look too fit. Tell me, have you slept at all since the funeral?
Not too well.
I thought so. I do wish you'd take Bayard's anodyne.
Oh, I shouldn't want to get into the habit.
5 drops in a glass of water won't hurt you. It's dangerous if you take more than that, of course.
Baird's anodyne?
You can get it at the chemist.
Thank you, Arwell. Baird's anodyne. I'll remember that, Mrs. Simmons. Thank you. Yes, yes, I'm coming. Who is it, please?
Huxley, CID.
Who?
Inspector Huxley.
CID?
Criminal Investigation Department. Scotland Yard.
In just a few moments, Frigidaire will present the second act of The Suspect, starring Charles Laughton. Frigidaire is the name that's known best around the world for keeping foods good to eat. And behind that name is more than a quarter of a century of experience in making cold. The dependable record of over 7 million Frigidaire refrigerators built and sold. You have only to consider Frigidaire's famous Meter-Mizer to realize what all this skill and experience can mean. The Meter-Mizer is the cold-making mechanism that's the heart of your modern Frigidaire. Think of the jobs it has to do. It has to make cold fast, even in the hottest weather. It has to be on the job quietly, hour after hour, year after year. It has to make oceans of cold on a mere trickle of current. And it has to be dependable. All this the Frigidaire engineers knew when they designed the Meter-Mizer. And they designed it well. For today, the Meter-Mizer is known as the simplest refrigerating mechanism ever built. So economical that it operates on less current than an ordinary light bulb. So powerful that it can make all the cold you'll ever need and still have power to spare. And so dependable that it's sealed in oil for life. Sealed against dirt and dust and moisture. You're twice as sure with two great names. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors.
Then why didn't you also have that loose step fixed?
Why? Well, now look here, Inspector, don't you believe me?
Unfortunately, Mr. Marshall, each Scotland Yard must examine every possibility.
I see.
Let's say, just for argument, that on Christmas Eve, a murderer was in this house thinking, I must do away with Cora Marshall.
Why?
I don't know why. Yet. All right, then. This theoretical murderer decides to make the killing look like an accident. The woman had gone upstairs. Good. He takes one of these walking sticks out of the umbrella stand. This one will do nicely. Then softly, he tiptoes up the stairs. You follow me, Mr. Marshall?
Oh, I follow you. It's very interesting. Go on.
Yes. He mustn't make a sound. He reaches the broken step here. Loosens the carpet like this to make it look as though the stair had given way. Then he slips into this corner on the landing and calls softly. Cora! And he waits, his eyes on her door. He waits a lifetime. Then he calls again. Cora! Then the door opens. He stands there, hiding, waiting for her to pass. He holds his breath, his hands tighten on the stick. She goes down one step, two, the third, the fourth and broken step. It's now or never. He springs from his hiding place. Now! Again! 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 She crumples and rolls down the stairs, after her. He raises his stick again. He must be sure. Once more, the stop!
I just said stop. And this is outrageous. How dare you say I killed my wife? How dare you?
I say you killed her. But it is an interesting theory, don't you think?
No.
Now, if we could only find something, some little something for a motive. You understand what I mean, Mr. Marshall?
I certainly do.
Yes. Well, good night, Mr. Marshall. Good night.
Good night, Inspector. been a long time since we dined at Luigi's, Mary.
Oh, Philip, you mustn't let the outrageous suspicions of stupid people keep us apart anymore.
No, Mary. Not anymore. Let's drink a toast. To our future.
To us, Philip. Mr. and Mrs. Philip Marsh.
And soon, my dear. Soon, eh?
Soon.
Well, Mr. Marshall, my congratulations on your marriage to Miss Mary Gray.
Thank you, Inspector Huxley.
And Miss Gray was seeing you even before the accidental death of your wife?
Maybe.
Could have been evidence. Possible motive for murder. Mm-hmm. I suppose you didn't know that by marrying the girl, you could legally prevent her testifying against you.
I hadn't really thought of that, Inspector.
Sure you didn't. Well, let me wish you a most successful marriage and a long one.
Thank you, Huxley.
Not at all. Goodbye, Mr. Marshall. For now.
Waiter, another one of those wonderful cherry tarts here when you get round to it. I've got an hour for lunch today.
Have you indeed now? What a decent sort of job you must have, Marshall.
Oh, it's you, Simmons.
Yes, and since you insist so strongly, I'll sit down and have a drink with you. Whiskey, waiter.
I'd cut out the whiskey if I were you, Simmons.
Would you now? Why?
I saw your wife this morning. She was working in the garden when I left my house, and her forehead was bruised again.
Wives do get tiresome at times,
you know.
You've
got to stop knocking her about, Simmons. You must get hold of yourself. You're young. You've got a charming wife.
And no money. Could you lend me a fiver, Marshal?
Not a brass farthing, at least not until you buck up and go to work. This will pay for your drink. Good day, sir.
Good day, shopkeeper. Waiter, make that a double whiskey.
Excuse me. But you're Mr. Simmons, I believe.
Oh, what if I am?
I say, isn't it?
Filthy. Who are you?
My name is Huxley.
Oh, yes. You're the priest chap who was asking all those questions after Mrs. Marshall died a few months ago. Tell me, who are you stalking now?
Oh, the same one as before. Your good neighbor, Philip Marshall.
I beg your pardon.
Mr. Simmons, did it ever occur to you that Mrs. Marshall's death might not have been entirely an accident?
Sit down, Inspector, and say that again. You interest me. You don't know how much you interest me.
What occasions this visit to my house, Simmons? If you think you're...
Are we alone, Marshal?
Yes, my wife's off to spend the day at Margaret with some friends. Why?
I had a nice little chat with Inspector Huxley today.
Huxley?
Scotland Yard, you know. He doesn't seem quite satisfied with the notion that Mrs. Marshall's death was an accident.
It's too bad.
Huxley thinks you, shall we say, helped your wife to a better world. But he can't prove it.
Oh?
He needs a witness.
Does he?
And I need £10.
You are a swine, aren't you?
Oh, quite.
A filthy, blackmailing swine.
Please, the walls are thin. The walls have ears. That's how I happened to hear things that fateful night.
You heard nothing.
I know, but I could say I did. She cried out. I heard a blow.
No one would ever believe you.
They might, Marshal. It might put you in a very awkward position, at the very least.
You're quite right, Simmons. Well, here's £5 now.
I need 10 to begin.
I'll go and get the other 5. It's in the other room.
And you might have another 25 for me Tuesday.
And another 25 the week after that?
Or 50, maybe. Have you a spot of whiskey in the house?
Whiskey? I'm sure I have.
Good.
Whiskey.
I do wish you'd take Bayer's anodyne, Mr. Marshall.
Bayer's anodyne. Yes.
5 drops won't hurt you. It's dangerous if you take more than that, of course.
Whiskey and Bayer's anodyne. Nice cocktail. Fit for a swine. Another drink, Simmons?
How about you? Aren't you going to have a drink?
No, thanks. You are a funny chap, Simmons.
Funny?
They're just a little heedless. I mean, Aren't you afraid coming here like this? Blackmail is a dangerous business.
Not when you know your man, and I know you, Marshal. Your kind was created to make things easier for my kind. The meek inherit the earth, the good book says. That's fine. And chaps like we inherit the meek. Not bad, what?
No, Simon's not bad at all.
No, not bad at all.
Into the canal, you swine. Swine.
Philip, dear, how long is that Mr. Simmons next door been missing now?
I don't know, Mary. A week, perhaps. I don't like it. You know, there's an air of tragedy about this whole street now. I've been thinking that John is going to Canada for his company. Don't you think we might go with him?
Canada? Oh, Philip, I'll be glad and thankful to get out of this house.
You felt it, too.
Let's go with John. Let's go to Canada, Philip.
So we shall, Mary. So we shall indeed.
Five minutes to sailing. All visitors ashore, please. 5 minutes.
Bartender, whiskey and soda, please.
Marshal. Well, hello.
Inspector Huxley, you turn up everywhere, don't you?
Heard you were sailing for Canada.
Is that why you're here?
Oh, no. Seeing an old friend off, name of Pennyfeather.
Oh, yes.
No, it's your neighbor Simmons has me worried now.
Oh, he'll turn up. He always does.
Simmons has turned up.
You don't say.
Fished him out of the canal behind the terrace.
Oh, how ghastly. Must have fallen in when he was tight, I should think.
No. Thrown in when he was dead.
No.
Poison, pint or so of whiskey.
That's shocking. You don't know who did it?
We know.
Who?
His wife.
No. Oh, no.
Definitely. It's a clear case. He was a rotter. Used to beat her about frightfully. She admits it.
Well, that's not possible.
Oh, yes. The stuff in his stomach is identical with the patent sleeping drug she keeps on hand.
You can't hang her. No jury would convict that woman.
And I say the jury won't even leave the box.
But she's innocent. I know it.
Well, don't let it upset you, Marshal. After all, murder's been committed. Well, there's my man now. Pennyfeather. Goodbye, Marshal. Bon voyage and all that. Very best of luck in Canada.
Thank you.
Pennyfeather! Hold on, will you?
Whiskey and soda for you, sir.
No, thank you. No.
But you ordered it, sir. I say there. Never mind. Somebody will want it.
Three minutes for sailing. Oh, you can't go ashore now. We're just going to haul in the gangplank. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. I thought you were a passenger. Go right down, sir.
There he comes now, Sergeant. Down the gangplank. Just as I'd hoped.
So help me, Inspector, you were right.
I think so. Just a hunch, of course. You see, physically, Marshall is no killer. He's a very decent and honorable sort. I was certain if he thought an innocent person was suffering for his crime. Look, here he comes now.
Inspector Huxley.
Yes, Marshal?
Shall we take a cab?
Where to?
Scotland Yard.
Thanks to you, Charles Laughton, for contributing a powerful and sympathetic performance to Hollywood Star Time. And thanks also to Rosalind Ivan, who played the part of Cora. We'll hear from Mr. Laughton again shortly. This radio production came to you direct from Hollywood and was written by Milton Geiger with a musical score composed and conducted by Frank Duvall. The entire production was under the direction of Jack Johnstone. The Suspect was presented by Frigidaire through the cooperation of Universal Pictures, producers of Canyon Passage, soon to be released. Hollywood Star Time is presented each week with the best wishes of your Frigidaire dealer, who invites you to come in and learn about the famous line of Frigidaire home appliances, electric water heaters, home freezers, and a wide variety of refrigerating and air conditioning equipment for homes, farms, stores, offices, and factories. And here again is Charles Lawton. Mr. Lawton, I understand you're soon leaving Hollywood for Broadway.
Yes, Wendell. I leave for New York in August to begin rehearsals on a new play. It's about the great astronomer Galileo.
Oh, that's wonderful. Who wrote it?
A pal of mine, Bertolt Brecht. And the date that I'm very much looking forward to will be right here on Hollywood Star Time next Saturday, when Eddie Bracken and Diana Lynn will star in Christmas in July. Sounds like a good time for everyone.
Well, thank you, Charles Lawton, and good luck in your new play.
Thank you.
This is Wendell Niles speaking for Frigidaire, made only by General Motors. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That does it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed our selections this week. If you want to find more from Theater 5, Hollywood Star Time, all the other shows and everything else Relic Radio, just visit the website at relicradio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows would like to help keep it all going, click on that. Thanks, as always, to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.